What's happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of All Kings Considered, the show where we take a look at Stephen King movies and tell you why they work, or in this case, why they don't. I'm your host, Aaron. With me, as always, the wildly talented, the amazingly patient, the GDMOS herself, Jen.
Hi.
Yeah, so today, we are going to be taking a look at the 1992 movie, The Lawnmower Man. And let me point, and there was much rejoicing. No. Let me point out ahead of time that, all right, so Stephen King sued to get his name taken off of this movie. And if you've seen it, you probably understand why. But it only shares, what did we figure? The only points it shares with the story is a one-off scene that you probably wouldn't know.
Which is only a bit of dialogue.
Yeah, and the fact that there is a lawnmower in it, and there is a man that uses the lawnmower. So that's it. So unlike usual episodes where we talk about, you know, kind of how it compares to the pre-existing material and how it works as far as an adaptation,
we can't
with this one. So we are just going to be talking about The Lawnmower Man as a movie. So buckle up. This one's going to be a little bit different than what you're used to from us.
Yeah, like just to try and refresh my memory, because it had been a long time since I read the short story. I read it this morning when I went upstairs to get dressed, because it's 8 pages. That's it. Like a short story, especially for Stephen King. And literally there is a lawnmower and there is a man. And one exchange of dialogue, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't know what else I could really do to lead in on this episode. Like I said, there's like very little comparison to the source material. He sued to get his name taken off
and lost.
And lost.
But they paid him 10 grand.
I
hope he spent it well.
You could argue that he still didn't get a good end on that deal.
No.
All right. So all that aside, let's get into this. 1992.
Let's get it over with.
Yeah, let's get this over with, because so I can watch something else at some point. 1992, The Lawnmower Man. Jen, give us the important cast.
All right. So you've got Jeff Fahey in the titular role of The Lawnmower Man, Job Smith. Pierce Brosnan as Dr. Lawrence Angelo, Jenny Wright as Marnie Burke, and basically the only other one of note would be Dean Norris, who was very, very oddly cast in the role of the director of the shop.
Yeah, very weird accent Dean Norris is putting on here. If you only know him from like Breaking Bad, you might say like, what the hell is coming out of his mouth? And I don't honestly know how to describe what it is. It feels sort of Connecticut-y.
Yeah, it feels very genteel, upper crusty, snobby New England.
Yeah.
Like I said to you before, the big jawed people from Family Guy.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah,
exactly.
Oh. But yeah. So, I mean, cast wise, like, I don't think, like, for the movie, the cast is okay. Like, Jeff Fahey wasn't like, he wasn't doing anything huge at the time, but he was like a fairly usable actor. Like they put him in the title role. People knew who he was. Pierce Brosnan. This was in between Remington Steele and James Bond. I'm relatively sure he got the James Bond role right after this movie.
Well, so, I hope it wasn't based off of
this. No, I have to assume that they didn't see it. And Jenny Wright, I know her from, Pink Floyd's The Wall. She plays the groupie that goes back to Pink's room with him, and then he has the freak out.
I only know her from Young Guns, which is, you know, she gets naked on a horse and says, "White Oaks, you can kiss my ass," and then rides out of town.
And she's in Near Dark, too, I believe.
Yeah, which I controversially do not care for that movie.
No, it is her. That's right. Okay. So, yeah, that's pretty much it on the cast. So
they should have also credited Pierce Brosnan's ground beef.
His chest hairs, yeah.
Good God. Yeah.
They should have gotten their own billing.
And his dumb earring.
And his need to wear like sweaters. It was that point in the time in 90s where if somebody was like well-to-do, they always had them in like a sweater and then a collared shirt, but they wanted to make him seem cool. So the collar was like, you know, all kind of disheveled. And he, of course, didn't have the top button buttoned.
No.
And he had a drink in his hand through the majority of the movie.
Also a cigarette.
Yeah. So I have to assume that that was just something he added to the character just to get through the day-to-days on this movie.
I mean, I can't say I blame him. He did like the most, my most disgusting thing, which is smoking in bed, which is fucking disgusting.
Yeah, he's kind of a dick. Like, if you only know Pierce Brosnan from like James Bond and stuff like that, this is...
Or Dante's Peak.
Or Dante's Peak. yeah, Dante's Peak.
Yeah, it's not a
this
good
is not
either.
That Pierce Brosnan. Like, he is, he's a dick in this movie, and like we're gonna get to why. So the movie opens, you can kind of stop me if I'm missing pieces or if I'm going out of order here.
Okay.
Because
that's
my
job.
Yeah, so the movie is an hour and 45 minutes, and that would be hard enough as it is, but we couldn't find the theatrical cut of the movie, so we had to watch the director's cut of the movie, which is 2 hours and 20 something minutes long, 24 minutes long, I think.
Yep.
We had to watch it twice. So the movie wasn't bad enough that I had to watch it once, but I had to watch it twice and I had to watch the director's cut both times. So I had to put almost 5 hours of my life into The Lawnmower Man.
Aaron is salty.
I am. This is a bad movie.
It is a bad movie.
But all right. Anyway, so it opens in... Does it open in the science lab with them doing like VR training on a monkey, right? On a chimp.
Yeah.
So they're doing VR training on a chimp, and he's kind of got this like, it looks like he's probably playing laser tag, and he's got like these stupid goggles on his head, and he's got like that big like smiley chimpanzee face, like.
Looks like a weird jet jaguar.
Yeah. This was probably around the same era where like people were using chimps in like all kinds of movies. Like they had them in like Project X and
there was some kind of fleet of chimps that we just needed to put in every movie possible.
Somebody
you know what this movie needs chimps.
Somebody had a talent agency that was just for chimpanzees and they were going to make some money that day.
Maybe they had like something to hold over the production companies.
I guess. So it opens with that.
You don't want anybody to see you having sex with this lady that isn't your wife. You'll put a chimp.
You're gonna put bubbles into this fucking movie, aren't you? So they're VR training for the military. Obviously, well, it's not supposed to be for the military, but it's clearly like some war games type training that they're putting him through.
It's another Stephen King common thing, like The Shop, like those shadow parts of the government. Like,
yeah,
it's probably also part of the dumbass short story that they made most of this into and slapped the Stephen King title onto. But yeah, it's obviously a shadow government.
The name of that other script should have just been like Internet Mumbo Jumbo.
I mean, it's Cyber God.
Mumbo Jumbo.
Which is equally stupid.
Cyber God. All right. Good. Ugh, we're going to derail and never get back at this, right?
Fine.
I know. No. It's not a bad thing. Anytime I don't have to talk about The Lawnmower Man, I'm... So they're VR training him for you know, wargamey type stuff, and the monkey is incredibly happy about it, as you can tell. And then he breaks loose. He gets free somehow.
Yep.
Remember, I saw the director's cut. My mind is hazy and angry, so like you know, details are a little bit lax. He breaks free. And then they cut and we're introduced to Job, played by Jeff Fahey. I assume that when they put this character together, they put up a picture of Tom Cullen from the original Stand. And they were like, make this guy. And they were like, well, we've only got Jeff Fahey. And they were like, just put him in some overalls then. But make sure that they're like 8 sizes too big. Like he looks like when he's walking around in his clothes, which were like a big shirt and overalls, they look like he looks like a little kid that's wearing his father's clothes, like running around, like just like his like sleeves should be flailing. They were so oversized.
Or like Lisa Left Eye Lopez.
Yeah, everything was just very like.
He doesn't want no scrubs.
Yeah. Goodness. they very quickly let you know that that Job is someone who would be considered of diminished mental capacity.
Yes.
And then, as if that wasn't quite fucking bad enough, so he lives in a shack. I don't even want to call it a shed because a shed feels like it's too nice
for
where
he
lives. He lives in a shack with like pictures of like Jesus and car parts kind of all over the place, like engine parts and things that he's put together. Like clearly he has no real interaction with the outside world. He probably doesn't have any friends. And then you're introduced to like his only social interaction really, which is like the angry priest.
Yeah.
Who comes in and he's like, he's got like the thick Irish accent because of course he does. And he just proceeds to like berate and beat the piss out of Job for like very minor infractions. Like, oh, there's some dust on this steps. Oh, it's the devil with you, boy. And he like, he like beats him with reeds for 6 hours. Like, so now the monkey has gotten loose, or the chimpanzee has gotten loose. And here's where our two stories tie together. The chimpanzee shows up at Job's shack with his little space goggles on, and he's looking at things. And it kind of reads like those scenes in The Terminator where the Terminator is looking at things. And like the computer,
shittier.
yeah, exactly. Like, and the computer is detailing like, oh, this is a threat and this is not a threat. And so Job sees him and he freaks out because he must be Cyboman, which is a comic book character that Job really likes to read, which is about a space chimp. And he's like, oh, Cyboman, like you're hurt. Like, cause when he'd broken free, he got injured. You're bleeding. Here, come back to my shack and I'll patch you up real good. So he's in the shack and he's helping Cyboman. He's showing Cyboman the comic books that adventures he must have been on.
And chimps can't read.
So, you know, the chimp is just kind of like just sitting there. Like he feels that Job is no threat. Like it says so on his little readout or whatever. And like if I'm making this sound cool in any shape or way, I want you to know that it's not. Like I'm over explaining if it looks good. So the angry priest comes and looks in the window and he sees Job in there with a chimpanzee. And so he immediately goes and calls he calls cops, and the shop agency shows up with all their guys, and Pierce Brosnan's like, look, this monkey is ridiculously expensive and trained and you can't kill it. And the government people are like, fuck that chimpanzee, we're gonna shoot it. And he's like, well, you better not, you got to at least let me try to, like, you know, solve this peacefully. And they're like, well, whatever. And you know, so they come out and I don't remember what the chimp's name is. Do you? There is
it's like a number.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Not Cybo Man gets pretty angry when he sees all the people with guns, and Job is like, no, hey, everything's fine. No, he's my friend. He won't hurt anybody. And you know, it's kind of one of those scenes where like the chimpanzee or somebody in the scene stepped on a twig and one trigger happy guy's like, ah, and he just starts firing fucking everywhere. And they just all start unloading, and the chimp is hopping up into the tree, and eventually they shoot him and he falls down right in front of Job. Right. So why would this not be like an even more horrible thing, that you've got this guy who thinks that escaped chimpanzee is this comic book character that he adores, but he just watched a bunch of arms dudes rolled up and just shot the shit out of him.
Took him out.
Yeah. Just shot the absolute hell out of Cybo Man. So he is traumatized. And of course, you know, the priest who's been taking care of Job, you know, for a long time now, he's probably really concerned about Job's well-being, right? Well, if he was, all of that went away when the government head who was there was like, you know, we could totally make a donation to your parish, you know, to keep this whole thing quiet. And being the God-fearing churchly man that he is, he's like, all right, that's fine. That, yeah, we can do that. And then they show later in the evening, and Job is, you know, Job's pretty upset. And Father Fuckface goes in there and takes a belt and he's like, well, you know, Job, we can't tell anybody about this. And Job's like, yeah, I'm not going to tell anybody about it. And the priest is like, well, that's not good enough for me, and proceeds to whip the shit out of him. Basically kind of like a learned aversion. Like, I'm not going to say anything because I'm afraid of getting hit. Real fucking great guy.
Any excuse to beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, he berates him verbally, and he abuses him emotionally and mentally, and he's just a terrible, terrible person.
I hope he doesn't teach Sunday school, because...
Yeah, I don't think he's probably very good with children.
No. Definitely not.
But the next morning, we are introduced to the man who owns the landscaping company, who just so happens to be a drunk and also happens to be the brother of the priest. And he goes in to see Job, and he's much, much nicer to him. You can tell that he genuinely cares about Job.
Yep.
Wants the best for him, takes him out to help work with the landscaping company, to get him out to be around people, and to so that he can have some independence. And he notices that Job is a little worse for the wear this morning. And it's like, you know, did my brother get to beating on you again? And Job's like, well, no, you know, it's whatever, and tries to hide it. Is that when the priest comes in and says something to him, and the brother basically tells him to go fuck himself or something, like calls him like a tight ass, basically?
I think so.
Yeah, they get outside and they're doing something, and the priest brother comes over and he gets kind of shitty, and the landscaper brother says, like, fuck off, basically, like, you're a dick, go away, I've got this. And then he tells Job, like, I'm gonna teach you how to drive today. And then they hop in the car. And Job just, like, I don't know what teach to drive meant, because there was no point in the, like, from Job getting behind the wheel of the car to when they drove out of frame that he looked like he was unsure of what he was doing. So this is, I have to assume that this is the guy that taught Michael Myers to drive in the first Halloween movie when they're like, well, he was driving pretty fucking good. Like, he was obviously taught by the guy that owns this landscaping company, because everything was fine. And they're out doing their, they show them out doing their work, where you're introduced to, this younger kid, probably 10, 11 years old, something like that, who is friends with Job. They talk comic books, superheroes. It's like, you know, they're like best buds, you would say. Yeah. You're also introduced to the guy who works at the gas station, whose name I don't want to bother remembering, because he's a total dickhole. He's an absolute fucking, just a redneck jerk off, and treats Job accordingly to what one would do if that's who you were as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And then they show them, you know, doing their yard work or whatever. You get a quick introduction to the woman who lives in the big expensive house, who's portrayed kind of as a bit of a... she ain't old enough to be a cougar, but she's a wife, she's divorced,
she's a widow.
She obviously married somebody that was worth a fair amount of money.
Somebody calls her a whore, and the drunk landscaper guy says whores get paid for it. She does it because she likes it.
Yeah.
So she's
a dick enthusiast.
Yeah. Yeah, that works. She's got a lot of money. She's got no husband, and enjoys the occasional company of men.
Yep. So she kind of... Here's where it gets a tiny bit weird, right? So she kind of eyeballs Job a little bit.
A very little bit.
Very little bit.
She's into the redneck gas station dickhead at first. And then... she notices that Job exists.
Right.
To start.
Yeah. And that he's, like, obviously in good shape because the job that he does is outdoors and whatever. So she's kind of caught the eye, or he caught her eye, so to speak.
Yeah.
You're also reintroduced to Pierce Brosnan, who lives in, like, the same little kind of cul-de-sac sort of area that all of these people live in. You're also introduced to Pierce Brosnan's wife, who is kind of, you would say in the beginning, you'd be like, man, she's kind of awful. But then after you realize how awful Pierce Brosnan is, you're like, well, she's not that awful, I guess. Like, there's a reason for why she's so awful. He's obsessed. He's an obsessive, like scientist, doctor. I don't know what you would want to call him in this. Like, he is 100% focused and obsessed with this, like, VR world that he's creating. And like, she comes downstairs and he's got a big old headpiece on and he's in a kind of weightless chair and doing a thing where you're falling or whatever. And now the graphics in the VR stuff look like they look like Atari type graphics. Like, they're a little bit better than that, but I would argue that they look like
Star Fox.
They kind of look like that early 90s. Like,
I mean, it was the early 90s.
But that early 90s, like, CD-ROM, very, like, this is the highest tech ever.
Mm-hmm. Like, I would get excited playing Zaxxon on my IBM PC Junior. It's like that level of...
So Pierce Brosnan is like, hey, random neighborhood kid. And Job, why don't you guys come into my house? Come down here in my basement, and I got this video game set up that y'all can try. And he's got them both on this kind of it's like a flying game, like a spaceship game. So they're laying forward on. I don't know if any of you have ever played that. There is a motorcycle game that you would have in the arcade where you would sit on the motorcycle and you would turn by leaning into the motorcycle and it would tip. Same principle. Mm-hmm. So they're on this thing and they're kind of using their motion to move it and shoot. And it's a race, I think, some kind of a race. And the kid keeps winning, but Job is just, he's fascinated by this. Like, he's so into it. He thinks it's so cool. And so does the kid. And I guess for the time, sure, it would have been considered like straight state of the art.
So mourning the loss of his test subjects, you know, Pierce Brosnan has identified that maybe it's all right. So the chimp thing ended in blood and tears. Maybe I can help out the guy who mows my lawn, who, you know, basically has the same level of intellect as the kid who lives next door, who's like 10.
Yeah.
So, you know, he exploits the relationship with the little kid who lives next door in order to spend more time with Job to get a sense of whether or not he can try these tests on him, on a human.
Right. Mind you, this is completely without any kind of permission from the shop or whoever he was working for during this point in time. And he only kind of tells the priest what he's going to be doing.
Yeah.
Just that he wants him to basically like test out some of the programs.
Mm-hmm. So he's going to do some shady shit.
But what he presents to Job when he comes up with this idea is that he has programs that he could run Job through that would help him become smart.
Yep.
That would kind of, I'm using air quotes, fix what's wrong with him.
Yeah, because like Job is a very stereotypical tragic figure who, you know, he knows that he's different. You know, he's a very simple but good-hearted guy, and he knows that he's different from everybody else. So when presented with this opportunity, like, why wouldn't he want to be more like other people?
So they set about doing it. He starts him off slow, and you know, it's got some side effects in the beginning. Job is a little unsure of when he first goes into the VR. Like, he gets very nervous and upset, kind of doesn't understand what's going on. He feels like kind of like when you would see videos of people using VR now, where they lose their kind of spatial awareness and they think that they're actually falling when they're still actually sitting in the same spot that they were. And I believe some headaches maybe in the beginning or something.
In the beginning.
Yeah. But he really takes to it. In fact, Job likes it. He kind of notices sort of an immediate bit of difference. It's not like an overnight thing. They don't imply that he does like one program and then the next day he's a fucking Rhodes Scholar or anything like that. But they do imply that there is differences, that he notices differences.
He's able to read, and he starts, you know, reading like more complicated stuff as he gets farther into it.
And I think he's talking with, there's a scene where he's talking with the landscaping guy, and they're talking about like math or something like that. Something math related. And the priest comes out and he gets all pissy, and he takes the book from Job to see what it is. And he's like, well, what do you know about math? You don't know about any of these things. And Job's like, I know a lot of things. I know a whole lot more than you think I know.
Yep.
I'm smarter than you think I am. And this is the first time that they show that Job's personality is shifting a little bit, and he's standing up for himself a little bit.
Then he starts to like take more pride in how he looks.
Yeah.
He's obsessed with like dressing like a cowboy.
He wants to have nice clothes like he sees in the magazines. So he gets like the Wrangler jeans with the big gold belt buckle and a shirt that's tucked
cowboy
in.
Boots.
Cowboy boots. But before he even does the clothing thing, there's the scene in his shack where he walks past, he has like a mirror in his shack, and he walks by and he's not wearing a shirt. He's just wearing his overalls, and he kind of notices his own form. Mm-hmm. Jeff Fahey is a pretty, he's built. He's like an athletic looking guy. So he's kind of, I don't want to say he's like flexing or anything like that, but he's looking and he's noticing that, like, you know, if he pushes his arms a certain way that the muscles are, he's noticing his own figure for the first time. And the priest comes in and he's like, what the fuck is going on in here? You know, and he starts calling him like, you know, like he's sinning, like it's vanity and blah, 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 blah. And Job says to him, you should really knock on the door before you burst into people's houses like that. You know, people deserve privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Like another very standing up for yourself moment. And the priest kind of, he goes to hit him, doesn't he? Doesn't he go to like hit him and he catches his hand?
Yep.
Job catches his hand and he doesn't squeeze it like, oh, you think he's going to Terminator squeeze and break his wrist or something. But he just holds it in place, and the priest kind of gets that look like, uh-oh, maybe I've gone too far this time or something is very different. And he kind of just leaves it at that. So after the little scuffle between Job and the priest, we cut to the next day. And I do believe that that's where the scene with the math book comes in, and the lawnmower, the landscape owner says, you know, like, you know, leave him alone.
Yeah.
We go to the gas station. There's a lot of like, it's set the very patterned movie. Like we go from here to here to here and then back and then here to here to here and back. Like it's always kind of the same. They go to the gas station and, they meet with Redneck McGee again. And, The landscape guy says that he feels that the woman that lives in the house is kind of sweet on Job.
Marnie,
that she's a bit sweet on Job. And now Job is wearing his kind of nicer clothing a little bit. And the gas station guy's like, hell no, that's ridiculous. And he kind of gets pushy with the landscape guy. Job comes over to kind of intervene to say, you know, like, leave him alone. And the gas station guy punches him. Like, knocks him. They leave. They go to work. And Job is, the girl, that's where it comes from. The girl from the house next door has come to the gas station and kind of taken notice of Job in his new clothing. But, and that's what started the fight.
Yeah.
Because the landscape guy's like, I think she's a little sweet on you. So that day, while they're out mowing lawns, she kind of gives Job the what's up a little bit.
She offers him lemonade.
Yes, she offers him lemonade, and they kind of, they hook up.
Yeah, apparently lemonade is an aphrodisiac.
Lemonade is the thing. Who knew?
It's like Spanish fly.
Yep. And you know, Job got laid. I don't really know what to say about that. Because you kind of have to figure, in the universe of this movie, she took advantage of a man with diminished mental capacity.
Everybody pretty much in this entire film, except for the little kid and the landscape owner and Job, obviously, suck.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Job is one of the most abused characters I think I've ever seen in a movie. And you don't realize it when you're thinking, like when you just kind of go into the movie, you don't think about it. And then you just see how everyone treats him. It's horrible. And yeah. I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to make him so sympathetic that when the ending eventually comes, like, it's such a drastic difference from where he started. But Jesus Christ, like, there were other ways to go about doing that without making it so...
Yeah, I mean, like, you could have cruel. Finessed like, it a little bit yeah, more instead.
They are of, just like... 100% cruel to him.
Yeah.
So... Job is still working with Pierce Brosnan, and you know, they're getting a little more intensive on the programs that they're using because Job is getting better.
Yeah, it's clearly yeah. working. Yeah. He's becoming more.
He's even talking different. Yeah. Like his sentence structures are completely different. He had a childlike quality to his dialogue early in the movie, and now he's much more adult with the yeah. way he's talking. A little bit more cool and calm and deliberate, but still those moments of like kind of how would you
just
call it?
Just being innocent.
Over emotion. Yeah. Like where like emotion takes over and he's in the moment and he just kind of freaks out. So they're doing more work and he has a seizure. He seizes up because the program is a little bit more intensive, I guess, than they were anticipating, and it's built up over time. And Pierce Brosnan's like, look, this is really dangerous. I think we should step back and focus more on the building block stuff that we were doing before mm-hmm. and figure out how to work this better. And then we can move back forward into these tougher programs. And Job is like, no, I don't want to do that. I want to continue to do this. I'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Everything's cool. And I do believe that it's right around this time that the shop figures out what Pierce Brosnan is doing.
Yep.
And it's kind of like, what are you crazy? You had no permission to do any of this stuff. You're putting us in a really tough spot if something goes wrong. But, hey, you know, I've got some people who would probably be really interested in this project if it comes to, you know, be beneficial. You know, maybe I can not look. You know, maybe I could turn side eye.
Yeah,
and you
they're
can continue
pissed that
to
he
do.
Was doing it without authorization, but they're also intrigued because it's so far successful.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And how they can manipulate that and use it for their own gain.
Yeah.
If it continues to be successful.
You know, the funny thing is the way they talk, I pointed out to you when we were watching it, that the way they talk about how important virtual reality is going to be, like the way they describe it, the way they define what it's going to be to people in the world is what you would describe the internet as
yeah.
now. Like, so they were, it's funny because they weren't talking about anything so far-fetched that it wasn't going to be a reality, but they were talking about the wrong part of it.
Yeah.
Like, they were talking about actual VR, that people were going to plug in these headsets and they were going to be part of an actual kind of virtual world, which, you know, I mean, sure, some people do those things now that we do have VR, but the way they were describing it is the internet,
yeah,
message boards, social media. Like, that's what they were talking about, that everyone is going to have their own little portion of this kind of vast world.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't VR. Like, if they had, the internet wasn't even a term then, or was it? Did they use did they call it like an internet?
I think
or something
so.
Like that? Like, that? Yeah. Like, it was in such its infancy that, like, they didn't even have a real term for it at the time. But anyway, Job says, no way, I want to keep doing this stuff. So Pierce Brosnan brings him into the shop for the first time. So they're taking it out of his basement where he's got his setup and into a actual science lab.
Yeah.
They have the giant gyro things that for some reason they put people in any tech related movie in the mid 80s to mid 90s. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, he's kind of got essentially weightlessness now. He can move free of gravity to a certain extent. And they trains him in on that a little bit, and he takes right to it. Like, he loves it. Mm-hmm. He's obviously, you know, very adept at using these things. And on the outside world, he's continuing to change. He's still hooking up with Marnie. He gave up reading comic books.
Yep, and gave his collection.
He gave his whole collection to the kid. In what I thought was quite a touching scene, actually. Like, he's like, oh, you know, are you going to come look at comic books in the back with me? And Job's like, nah, man, I gave up reading them. I don't read them anymore. I got rid of my whole collection. He's like, you did? And he's like, yeah, it's in the back of the truck for you. Like, he's going to get, like, he's like, oh, it's like a best friend moment. The kid's like, oh, thanks.
Yeah.
And he runs off. He runs off to the back of the truck out of the diner that they're in to look at the comic books. And Job has an episode where now he can hear people talking.
Yep.
And he's starting to get like a bit of a headache. And I don't think he bleeds from the nose, but it would be one of those scenes where if somebody did bleed from the nose, you would understand why.
Yeah.
Like, he's just kind of holding his head and he's freaking out. And people around him in the diner are like, what's the matter with that guy? You know, like, kind of thing. Like, I hope he doesn't look over here. And he's like looking around because he hears all these voices and he's trying to block him out. And doesn't he go to Pierce Brosnan about it? He goes to Pierce Brosnan, and Pierce Brosnan's like, man, that doesn't sound very good.
Yeah. Yeah. He freaks out, runs out of the diner, and then, you know, kind of brings this to Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
You know, this, what was supposed to make him more intelligent has now evolved beyond what they thought it would be. And now, you know, he can hear other people's thoughts.
Yeah.
So this is like taking a complete turn from where it was intended, just to make him more intelligent, more like a, you know, quote unquote, regular adult. And now, you know, now it's going into these wackadoo powers.
They kind of turned him into the dad from the Firestarter,
Yeah.
Like, he's got that kind of like where eventually he'll get to the point where if he concentrates really hard at somebody, he can influence what they do.
Yeah,
because he can telepathically talk to them.
Yeah, and influence them. And then he gets to the point where he doesn't even have to concentrate hard. Like, it snowballs so much. Like, you know, eventually he's running the lawn because he's still mowing lawns,
yep.
Even though, you know, he's improved intellectually. He's controlling the lawnmower with his mind.
Yeah.
So he can, like, you know, sit and drink a glass of lemonade and the lawnmower is just mowing the lawn.
Yeah.
Without anybody.
This big weirdo lawnmower with like no front guard on it. It's just like
a weird looking.
Yeah.
Lawnmower.
It's got those, like, if you were to say like an old school stick push mower with no motor, like one of those rotating blade things, like the barrel blades. The front of it is just two of those that move at like an ungodly speed. And
honestly, it makes me want one for our lawn. That would be so much more efficient.
Right. Yeah. So he's developing powers now, and they're kind of at first he digs them, and he's got they're kind of nothing too that you should be really scared of. And then they kind of quickly shift to being like a bit too much. Like, he takes Marnie to the shop and hooks her into the other gyro thingy. So he's in one, she's in the other, and they have essentially like virtual sex. Like, he logs her into this virtual world, and they're like, you know, kind of amorphous blobs. They look like if you've ever seen The Wall, it looks like the fucking flowers scene where they're kind of melting into each other. And
yeah,
and it just doesn't look good.
No.
It looks very dated. I don't know how it would have ever looked good back in the day, and I don't remember thinking that it looked particularly good when it first came out. But now, whoa. Like,
yeah, no, it's not good.
It doesn't even have that nostalgia tick. Like, it just looks lower end.
Yeah.
Well, Marnie doesn't do so well with it as
I mean, she's into it at first.
Right,
and then
she gets over. She gets a little too wound up in it, and she has kind of a mental break. Not a seizure, but she has like I would call it like a beyond severe panic attack.
Yeah. And it turns her basically catatonic eventually.
She reminds me of, because she's up and walking around, like she's like moving around. She's just kind of,
the brain's not there.
Yeah. There's I swear it's a Stephen King character, and I'm sure we'll get to it at some point. and I can't remember who it is, but there's an, like, hopefully I remember this when the, when that episode comes along so that I can be like, that's the one.
Oh, okay.
But there is a character in, oh, Nadine from The Stand.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
she
yeah.
reminds me a lot of Nadine from The Stand.
Yeah.
Just kind of there, but not quite there, and a little bit, like, just...
There's neurons firing, but, like, not...
Yeah, they're not catching nothing.
No.
All right, so then, see, I this is how much I dislike this movie, that I'm, like, trying to get through it.
I mean, and... basically, it boils down to he brings her there to try and include her and be like, see, isn't this great? This is what I've been doing. And then her brain explodes, and it goes south from there. And then his powers just continue to evolve, and... it just goes south really quick. Like, the shop is freaked out that it's gotten as far as it has. Pierce Brosnan is freaked out that he's changed as much as he has.
Yep. And he realizes the shop basically fucked him over, that they're going to come and take Job and use him as a weapon now, basically. Yeah.
And Job just honestly wants his independence and is so... I think so overwhelmed by all of these external forces. Like, you know, he's basically like, you made me into this and now I can do all of these things and you want to take it away and control me. And this is like the first freedom and independence he's ever had in his life.
Yeah.
And he kind of goes mad
with power. Well, he has that whole thing where he's talking about like, I am God here. Like, in your world, I was looked down on and spit on and made fun of, and no one cared about anything about to do with me, but here I'm God in this world, and you're all gonna bow down to me now.
And he's gonna like infiltrate everything, and what is it, like the line is like his rebirth will be like the ringing of every telephone or something.
Well, and
like
he
that
says like
when
time. Like I will ring every phone,
but
before we get to that, he plugs him into this machine that essentially downloads information into Job's brain, like a fast learning kind of thing. Think of it like the scene in The Fifth Element where Leeloo learns all of the history.
Job did that to himself.
Well, no, he brought him in there, and he was only supposed to do one.
Right,
and then
he wanted to test how far he had come, and Job goes through
all of it. Yeah. Kind of like the scene from The Matrix too, where like Keanu's like, I know Kung Fu, because he loads in all of this information.
For
like
the
Job,
last time, no, yeah. You don't.
Job is going through like all of this information now. So now he essentially, from, I have to assume that he knows
everything.
Goddamn near everything.
Yeah.
And then he just goes fucking mad with power.
Yep.
He kills the priest.
Yep.
Marnie kills herself?
I don't remember.
She, or either that or she ends up locked up. I can't remember what it was. They found her wandering around, I think is what they said, in the middle of the street or something.
Yeah, I think she was like naked and laughing. So things are not going well for Marnie.
He kills the guy from the gas station.
He kills the abusive dad of the kid.
Yes. Yeah, we glossed right over that fucking guy. There's the kid next door has an abusive father, and he runs the crazy lawnmower into the house, obviously unmanned. He does it all with his head, and like tears through the living room and like kills him using that. I would like to point out that this is just another one of those movies where they have an abusive father, and then they have a scene of the father sitting down to drink a cheap can of beer, and he's watching wrestling. He's watching professional wrestling. And on behalf of professional wrestling fans, I would like to say, fuck you and your low-hanging fruit, Hollywood. Not everybody that watches wrestling beats the shit out of their children. Like, it's just not a thing. Like, sometimes they watch, like, I don't know, Fox News or some bullshit like that. Like, it's not all wrestling. Anyway. He kills that guy, and then he heads off to the shop, or he makes Pierce Brosnan's wife into this kind of like robotic Stepford wife.
Yeah.
Because she is mean to Pierce Brosnan. She doesn't support his research and how intense he is on it. And Job, weirdly enough, is like still pretty loyal to Pierce Brosnan. Like he views Pierce Brosnan as a friend.
Yeah.
And does this as kind of a gift. Like, thank you for all that you've given me. I turned your wife into a robot. Thanks, Job.
I made your wife more agreeable.
Yeah. Here's her 1950, it's like pumps and pearls, mm-hmm. I guess. So after taking care of all that shit, and there's the scene where so the cops are at the kid's house after the father has been run over by the weird fucking lawnmower. And they're like, man, what a crazy scene. And they're running through like how nuts it is. And they're talking to Pierce Brosnan about all this, which I'm just like, who would do this? Like, this is a crime scene. And you're going to be like, hey, neighbor, come on over here. Let me tell you all the gory details about this case. I'm sure you didn't have anything to do with it, huh? Wink, wink. So they're talking to Pierce Brosnan about it. And they're trying to figure out like what could have possibly occurred. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they pan over to Jeff Fahey in like a, he looks like he's in Tron. Like he's wearing like a Tron suit. And he like, he's like intently staring at the cops. Like, and you can't see me. I wish I could like put a picture of how this looks, but he's like intently staring at the cops. And then they're like, all of a sudden the cops are like, well, you know, these things happen. I'm sure it's just an accident. So they're kind of letting you know that like Job can now influence the minds of others, because this clearly not an accident and not something that happens all the time incident has occurred. And they're just like, eh, fuck it. It's fine. I'm sure it'll sort itself out.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know, sometimes people just burst into ribbons, I guess. I don't know. It's not uncommon for a man to just lose it one night and shred his entire living room like an angry cat.
I guess it's the beginning of the lawnmower revolution.
It is. But after, after Job settles up all them debts, he heads off to the shop and he sets the building to explode. Or does Pierce Brosnan set the building to explode? Somebody sets the building to explode. But they head off to the shop after him. But Job's kind of hooked into the machine. He's going to, in essence, upload himself, his soul, his personality, whatever, into this virtual world.
Kind of like Horace Pinker.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah.
Only not as fun.
Yeah. Definitely not as fun as Horace Pinker.
And who ever thought that they could say that Shocker was a more entertaining...
Was the more entertaining film. Yeah. Huh. Good Lord. thanks, Wes Craven. Yeah, so Pierce Brosnan has this kind of one-off conversation with Job, like, you can't do this. You're this isn't what we started out doing. This isn't you. And Job's like, it is now. And he's like, well, the building's rigged to explode, and you know, you've got to come with me. And he's like, oh, I'm not gonna. And he's starting to try to like the inside the virtual world. He's like trying to get into all of the, they look like honeycombs. He's trying to get into all of these little sections, and each one is saying denied. And he's getting angrier and angrier. Like when you were young and you tried to dial into AOL and that fucking number would not dial through, and it would just hang up and try and do it again and do it again and do it again. And Job's got no dial up access for a good 10 minutes or so. And, finally, he gets it. He, shoo.
Yep.
And they think that maybe he didn't get in, but Job's whole body turns into like a husk and then disintegrates into dust. So he uploaded himself into the virtual world, into the internets,
yep,
so to speak.
And left his skin suit just behind.
Not even a skin suit. He looks like, I don't even know. He looks
like a pillowcase.
It's just like a pillowcase full of dust. Like somebody used him for antiquing. And Job is gone. So Pierce Brosnan gets the kid, who was also there for some reason, I don't remember, trying to help Job, I guess. They haul ass outside. And the place blows up. And that's it. And then as the ending, Pierce Brosnan is now. So Pierce Brosnan, I don't know what happened to his wife. I don't remember what happened to his wife. I'm assuming maybe she's just in a nut house somewhere, that she's just not around. Because Pierce Brosnan is now shacked up with the woman from next door who is the mother of the kid that Job is friends with.
Yep.
So the wife of the abusive father is now kind of hooked up with Pierce Brosnan.
Like you do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, this has been a traumatic event. Like, this, no, it's not a rebound. What are you talking about?
No, my husband was just murdered by a rogue lawnmower.
And then the handicapped guy that mows our lawn turned to dust. Like,
but yeah, let's, you and I hook up and we'll start a new life all over again.
It's like the scene in Terminator 2 when the bomb goes off and like it's stripping the skin and everything away from Linda Hamilton and she just turns to dust. Like, that's what Job turns into without all the other cool stuff that went into that scene.
Yeah.
oh man. Yeah. There are so many things that we glossed over.
Because it was 2 hours and 24 minutes.
So when Pierce Brosnan and the mom are going up the stairs to leave at the end, they're shutting everything off, the phone rings. And you're reminded of the scene where Job said that his rebirth would be the ringing of every phone at the same time.
And then all of a sudden,
the other phones, like in the neighborhood, that you can hear them all ringing. So not only did he all ring them all at the same time, he made them so fucking loud that everybody outside could hear all of these phones everywhere.
Yep.
What a dick.
I know how much you hate a ringing phone.
Just text, for fuck's sake.
That was before texting.
The Lawnmower Man is not a good movie. It does not have the nostalgia kick that I thought maybe it would when we first started to do it. I don't think I'd ever actually seen the entire thing until we sat down to watch it. And let me tell you that the 2+ hour director's cut is not the way to go about doing that movie.
No.
The director's cut should have been like the original, because none of that other shit that they added into that movie, I don't see how any of it added to any. I would honestly at some point like to go back and watch the cut version to see what exactly they added, because we're talking about like 40 minutes of movie that got put back in.
And I don't want to spend money to do it.
No. I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to rent it.
No.
The movie's not a lot of fun. And the really, really, really sad part is that we're going to have to watch the sequel, even though it's not related to Stephen King in any way. But I did say we were going to do any sequels as well, but we're not doing that next.
No,
we are 100% not doing that next, because I need a goddamn palate cleanser after that movie. So we have decided on the next one, and I'm going to be a jerk and I'm not going to tell you what we're doing yet, but we have gone with a classic for the next one. So you can kind of use your imagination where we might go with that one.
I mean, but you guys will be as surprised as I am, because I've already since forgotten what we decided to do.
So, yeah, that was our take on the Lawnmower Man. Don't watch it. Absolutely don't. Don't.
Like,
please, God, don't watch it.
I like goofy movies. I like some silly, shitty horror movies. And this one is so goofy that it's not fun.
Yeah. And it's mean-spirited. Like, yes, there are so many mean-spirited moments in this movie where they just take the most low-hanging fruit that they can use because of Job's mental capacity, that they hit it. It's like a nut shot on every single one.
Yeah.
They're just like, yeah, take this. Don't you feel so bad for him? And you're like, I did before. You didn't have to add all of this other shit.
Yeah,
what if that's the 40 minutes? It's just 40 minutes of, like, intolerance is what they added back into the movie.
It's just this overt exploitation of Job, and
it's just not fun.
No, it's not.
So take it from us here at All Kings. This is a don't watch. This is a 100% maybe don't consider this one.
Yeah. Yeah, don't consider this one.
All Kings, reconsider.
Yeah. Don't seek it out. Don't nostalgia watch it. We did this.
Yeah, we did
twice.
The heavy lifting, so you didn't have
so
to.
You
twice.
Don't have to.
Twice. Yeah. Wasn't bad enough. Had to watch it twice.
Ugh. Ugh. At least we did it before we had to watch it a third.
I know. Yeah.
Yuck.
Anyway.
All right.
So, friends, if you want to find us on Twitter.
Sorry.
That's all right. All Kings Pod. We have a Facebook page, I think. We have a group.
Yep.
Neither one of them are overly active.
But nope.
I will put up episode updates and stuff like that there if you're interested in checking them out. But until next time, which hopefully won't be like a super long time from now, because I feel like we have to do something nice as an apology for this episode.
Okay. But,
so
I'm down with that.
Yeah. That's going to do it for this time, everybody. Jen, say goodnight to everybody.
Goodnight, everybody.
Later, y'all.